Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy Podcast from Destinations International, the international trade association representing destination organizations. This podcast has been exclusively produced by Relic Agency. I'm Andreas Weisenborn, joined with Jack Johnson of Destinations International. Today, we are proud to welcome you to our podcast in a title we both share in part or in full, Advocacy. For this series, we wanted to tell the story of usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and key advocacy moments for them. We tend for these stories to tell the tale in full, containing both joy and triumph or crisis and disappointment. Each month, we will be joined by guests to tell their tale and a key moment in their destination's history. These are your Architects of Destination Advocacy. Hello, and welcome back. This is Andreas Weisenborn, and for this month's episode, and our seventh. So when we started to flesh out the idea of what a podcast could be for us, one of the things we really wanted to focus on was key stories or initiatives that would take place in our sector's history or future, kind of allowing us a little bit to traverse time, so to speak, to tell a full narrative arc on sometimes the good, the bad, and the ugly we as destination leaders might face. The latter two components we always felt were important, as sometimes things just don't go our way, even we are doing our best as advocates for our destination. So in 2021, no other story has captured the advocacy department's attention like the story of Visit Duluth. So in short, the city of Duluth, Minnesota, has selected an outside, out-of-state agency to represent the community of Duluth, with the role of Visit Duluth taking a much, much smaller role in the representation of the community. This is after a lengthy RFP and RFQ process, and with Visit Duluth representing the destination for almost 87 years. Now, I can spend hours talking about Visit Duluth and the broader industry ripple effects, but today, it is not my story to tell. It's hers, and it's our time to listen. So I'd like to welcome to the show Anna Tansky, President and CEO of Visit Duluth. Anna, welcome.
Thank you, Andreas. It's great to be here.
So I hemmed and hawed so many ways how to start this conversation, but I thought the best is to kind of set some level of institutionalized knowledge for all the readers and listeners to hear. But I wanted to ask you this. How long have you served and worked for Duluth, and also the staff as well of Visit Duluth, just to kind of set that as context for the rest of the conversation here?
Well, I think that's really important to share because we do have an incredible story and legacy here at Visit Duluth. I have represented this community for just over 30 years, all by choice, and very fortunate that I was able to build a career in this industry that I love and care about so greatly. And so back in 1991, I started at our convention center and then moved over to the DMO in 2005. That was all in a sales role as DOS, Director of Sales, and became president and CEO when I was named in 2014 and have been serving in that role ever since. But as you know, it does take a team, and it's just amazing when I sit and reflect on the incredible talent that we have acquired here at Visit Duluth, with a VP of Sales at 22 years experience, Director of Sports, almost 17 years, our incredible wealth of knowledge that unfortunately we no longer have with our Visitor Services Department. She was here with us for 22, almost 23 years. So we're talking decades upon decades. And you sprinkle in all the other talented team members that unfortunately are not a part of our team any longer. And it was well over 140 years combined experience.
That's incredible. I mean, I wanted to start this off was not only your team's institutionalized knowledge, but as I mentioned earlier, you know, I think I saw it somewhere, but in 2022, it would have been 87 years representing the community of Duluth, Minnesota. So I just think that's important for everyone to hear that and understand that throughout what we'll kind of go through the full narrative today.
I agree. I think longevity has its pros and cons, and we'll hear that filter through as this conversation unfolds.
So let's try to start at the beginning. For those of us who joined us in Houston, I could say with warning, really stole the show in such a key and short and all by sweet or maybe bittersweet moment. I said then what I said today as well, that, you know, I could talk about this for hours, but right now it's it's really not my story to tell, it's yours. But I wanted to go back in time, I guess, let's start 2020, but if it happens sooner, I wanted to kind of start where I think we first started engaging with the conversation, which really began with the talks and engagement with a potential merger between your organization and the convention center. But I wanted to kind of hear from you first and how this sort of started for your community and your destination organization.
And that's a really important point to begin this conversation, because it was a pivotal time where we were still in the throes of the pandemic. It was August and September of 2020, and looking at ways that we could maybe create efficiencies or align our missions even more than we had over our long partnership within the community. And I approached our mayor, and I think it's important to note that I have a very close relationship with our mayor and other elected officials. And part of that is due to longevity. And part of that is just due to leading up to the pandemic, a very healthy, thriving visitor economy here in our community, and our administration placed a very high value on that. It's our second largest industry in this city. So as we moved through the pandemic and this conversation came about, I had done outreach to a number of destinations around the country where there is some type of model in place that the convention center and DMO are either physically a part of one organization or there's some type of contracted agreement. And so just thought it was worth exploring for future discussions. And the mayor agreed and conversations ensued. And almost immediately, there was a sense of a shroud of secrecy is what we've all called it, because exec committee members from both boards of directors went into closed sessions with the city administration, and staff, myself included, were not a part of that dialogue. So as the conversations continued for several months, by December of 2020, the convention center opted to end the talks and not pursue a merger any further. And there were a number of reasons for that. Primarily, they were in transition. They had an interim CEO in place and felt they really needed to focus their efforts on the permanent search before making a really monumental decision of that magnitude. So it really became apparent that the timing just wasn't right. So on a Friday in December, the convention center ended those discussions. And on Monday, the mayor called me personally to inform me that our services would be put up for RFP.
I think another part of the story, again, you shared it so nice of your intro, is that you previously worked at the convention center. And in addition, I also know you all currently run your visitor center. So you in particular in your organization has knowledge and expertise on how to run not only group booking business, but leisure, but buildings in general. You have experience to do that. I think that's important to point out. With that fateful kind of moment in December of 2020, did you know that it would kind of go that way, the sort of nuclear option in some regard?
That was probably the biggest surprise. When the mayor called to inform me, I respected the fact that she said this is a very difficult conversation to have, but I wanted you to hear it from me first and have our own private conversation and dialogue around that. And I was very candid, and I will tell you, it did physically feel like a gut punch, because in no way would I have ever anticipated that the ending of a merger conversation would be the beginning of outsourcing conversation.
Yes. And anyone who's ever gone through an RFP, RFQ process, one of the first things they'll talk about is the, you know, sheer emotional toll it takes on the staffing, you know, just a distraction of doing your primary job, which is, you know, promoting and building quality of place. You know, and I think it's important for, again, for context for the audience to know the couple parts. One, you know, domestically, most destination organizations have some type of contract negotiation, contract in RFP, RFQ with their destinations. Some are evergreen, some have terms. I know Jack will always say this, no one will ever turn down an audit or an RFP, RFQ because it it is some semblance of a proof that, you know, you're a good steward of public money. The argument we always try to make and articulate very well is for common goods, you know, we don't privatize our water, our safety, our police force, you know, our fire and safety. You know, we shouldn't do the same thing for taxation promotion. So there is, I can understand the aspect of it being sort of a gut punch as started with that. So that ended your 2020. And so you started 2021 knowing you're about to go through an RFP, RFQ process. Kind of walk me through what was that like the very beginning of the year of just hearing that news, and then what did you want to do next?
Well, it was really a sense of determination with the new year beginning and all of the unknowns still swirling around the pandemic at that point. There were lights that we were starting to see at the end of the tunnel that indicated we had had a pretty solid, I would even say strong summer and fall during COVID. Duluth is known as an outdoor recreation mecca. We welcome 6.7 million visitors a year. As I mentioned, tourism is our second largest industry in this community. And so we now know what our community looks like without a fully activated tourism industry. And so knowing that and still doing better than expected, we thought, okay, we went 11 months without receiving a single dollar of lodging tax from the city, and yet we were thriving and we were innovative. And so our team was really galvanized in our determination to prove our worth and to really put forth a proposal that we would hold up against any competition and be very proud of. So we approached it, I would say, in the first quarter of 2021 as one of being in a time of uncertainty. We still had not brought a lot of our team back at that point. And so it was still grieving the loss of team members who had been furloughed or laid off for a really extended period of time, and beginning to feel some of the weariness so many of us felt for trying to make sure we were still fulfilling our mission and carrying forward those objectives, but doing it on a skeletal crew, so to speak. Yeah. So that was really the first quarter as we entered 2021.
And not to make the conversation about KPIs, but, you know, part of the research I did in prep for Advocacy Summit was I looked extensively on the traditional metrics and KPIs that Destination looks at, you know, visitors coming in, visitor spend, the tax incrementation, and you all have been succeeding for quite a long time. This is not a story of you have not been producing for your community. You know, that is not, you know, should not be at all at the discussion here, because that you all have been handedly winning that, you know. And so I think that's also important to point out is that, you know, that part of the equation, you know, you had the data and facts to say you had been performing what it means for your community.
Absolutely. The data, it backs up our own assertions that we were being impactful and successful. I think one thing we began to learn and realize is having had limited resources, when you mentioned contracts, ours was a three-year contract at a flat allocation every year. The funding in Duluth is very unique. I know many communities have different nuances to their funding sources, but ours is very highly politicized by the fact that we were grandfathered in to the state statute because Duluth's lodging tax existed prior to the state statute going into effect. Therefore, it does become, I guess, the power of the city administration to determine what that allocation looks like, the term of the contract, all of those factors. We have very little leverage. However, throughout all of these years, have continued to prove to the administration, to our community, that through collections in particular, which have seen steady and actually pretty impressive growth over the last 20 years, it really has been more about us learning how to share that story, which is why when we talk about community shared values, I can't emphasize enough that even when you are implementing all and utilizing all of the tools that we continue to see DI develop and deploy, there does seem to be a certain a trend out there within our industry that may not be enough. And that was sort of that double whammy of a shock when you realize we are delivering, we are fulfilling all of these objectives and serving honorably and in a really transparent way. And yet it just wasn't enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the story of a desterization, losing the RFP and going to a for-profit entity is not entirely unique. You know, we had started to see this before the pandemic, but like with everything with the pandemic, it's really accelerated issues, trends, causes that we had already been seeing before that. I did want to ask, when the RFP, you know, RFQ came out, you know, it was in the media. I was sort of curious, what was, you know, after your initial shock of knowing that's going to happen, what was initial questions and how did the community, you know, board members, your members, how did they feel towards this, you know, being handed to you?
It was highly politicized and polarizing for our community. The minute the RFQ was issued in May of 2021, it was very apparent that it was being written targeting an agency versus a DMO, just through the language and some of the scope of work elements that were included and the way it was configured. So we then chose to respond similar to the way an agency would respond. And we were successful in, I guess, advancing from the RFQ phase to the RFP phase. And so that was a really critical point where no local agencies were being advanced. Duluth was the only locally based organization that was going to advance to the final RFP process. And that was an eye-opener because we either figured we stand no chance whatsoever, it's going outside, or, all right, we have our work cut out for us, but in the end, they will recognize and value what we bring to the table as the local destination expert.
I mean, what a hard place to be in as for you and as a team, because you're, as you said it, you're literally looking, well, this is either all or nothing potentially. Anyone who understands, you know, crisis and trauma and stuff like that, to live under that duress, like you're distracted. You can't do what your primary work is to do, you know, and I can just only imagine how hard that was for you and the staff in that in-between period, you know, because you're sort of in the gray or the unknown at that point.
It was purgatory. It was limbo. And that uncertainty is probably the most challenging type of emotion I've ever encountered. Because when you're facing an obstacle or you're facing some type of adversarial conversation, you know what you're up against and you at least are able to face it head on and prepare or in some way be able to wrap your head around exactly what you need to do to actually be effective in that conversation. And the unknown was really challenging as far as we still were under contract. We had a mission to fulfill. When our funding was reinstated in March of 2021, we were ready. And it was an absolutely staggering and in a positive way, summer, fall for us in our community. We were still at a reduced budget and with a fraction of our team in place, and we shattered previous records. And so we remained focused on that objective, but at the end of the day, where it really starts to stretch people is the added stress, the added upheaval, I guess is the word I would use, where you're just on shaky ground all the time waiting for this all to play out.
Yeah, I just walk into eggshells, I can only imagine just what that's like from for you and your staff perspective. I wanted to kind of talk about, because you talked about this being highly politicized in the media, you know, when the day came when you'd find out whether or not, you know, you got, and I think, I don't think I've ever shared this with you, but, you know, I had been following a story extensively. And one of the nice things most cities do is they post these on YouTube. So you and I are an hour time zone difference. So I remember in my bed, like on my phone, my wife asleep next to me on YouTube, like probably close to midnight or 1 a.m. waiting through this city council meeting to hear this. But I just wanted to kind of to give that moment its space. I just wanted to hear from you. What was it like at that time? Because I know you spoke during then, hearing it, just kind of hear from your perspective, what was that day and that evening like for you?
Excruciating. It was an agonizing time because people were speaking, you know, given the opportunity for public comments at a public city council meeting, all done virtually. It was such a diverse reaction. There was so much community support. And I think a lot of, I guess I would even say sympathy from city councilors who are trying to be informed and make a really intensely, you know, potentially devastating decision, but really not understanding all of the components and trying very hard to do that. But at the end of that evening, when the vote was about to take place, it became clear that I would never defend their positions or pretend that I would know where they were coming from, but it did become apparent that they felt it was the right path to follow in that they were allocating public dollars in a more responsible way. This was not necessarily a move against Visit Duluth as the DMO. In their mind, it was a publicly vetted process that needed to play out. And they did add some of the additional language into the original language that was proposed and made modifications that would allow for the RFP to be split into several pieces of the scope of work, which is where Visit Duluth was then awarded meetings, conventions, and sports marketing and promotion, along with the visitor services component. So I think they felt that was sort of the best path forward for the community. And it certainly didn't seem the conversation was starting out that way, but as the evening progressed, it became apparent, and it was absolutely agonizing to watch it all unfold.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And again, to kind of give the moment its time, just to spell out for everyone, listeners, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the advertising promotion component that got broken up, the larger percentage of the public dollar investment went towards a private entity from a different state. Visit Duluth then subsequently got a smaller amount representing just the convention sales and aspect of it. And then I believe also another position is tended to be created as well within the city to manage the funds. There's a lot there to sort of talk about from what it was, but I kind of wanted to ask, you know, because I know that was a long night for you and your staff. What was that next, outside the media and that kind of stuff, what was that next day like for you?
The next day was a time where I felt as the leader of this organization, I would set the tone for how we move forward. And the most important part of that realization was acknowledging the impact on the team, because I knew what it felt like as an individual team member, but to see and hear and experience what this meant for our team that was still remaining at Visit Duluth, I wanted it to have the space it deserved for them to be heard, to acknowledge the grieving process that was now beginning. And it's a very real grief. It's mm-hmm. It's not just you're disappointed or it was really devastating. And so I wanted to give that its time, but also not wallow. And not to sound harsh or heartless, but I wanted to continue to find a path forward, because there was too much at stake for our industry and for our community. And we have that responsibility through the end of 2021. And we knew we could hold our head high. And that was, I think, the biggest message I wanted to carry forward through the grief and through the disbelief, that in the acceptance phase of that process, that we are very proud of what we have accomplished here. And this was not a time for people to feel ashamed or embarrassed, because we continued to deliver month after month and week after week. And we did not allow for this to be played out in the media. You've mentioned the media a few times. There was a very clear and it was just a very clear decision on my part that we were not going to have salacious headlines created by Visit Duluth, that we would continue to move forward in a professional and productive manner. And at the same time, behind closed doors, allowing the team to experience the very real emotions that we all felt.
Yeah, and absolutely no, yourself and none of the team members should feel any shame, you know, in when transcribed. I mean, I think the word loss, I can't overstate it enough. You know, as I mentioned the earlier show, now, not only how long Visit Duluth has been an institution, but as I said, you and your staff have represented. And I always have to remind desk organizations, you know, you all are residents of Duluth. You know, if you do your job well, you're not benefiting, you know, someone's bottom line. You know, you're actually benefiting yourself in a lot of ways as residents. You know, you all benefit from that quality of place, that purpose that you're bringing. So when you know, at the beginning of this, when you mentioned, you know, 30 and 20 and 20 some plus years of staffing, you know, all that is gone. You know, there's a great, there's a great companion podcast everyone should listen to, Bill Geist with Christy Morrison. It just came out 2 weeks ago. And she talks a great question there. She says, you know, what's going to happen when a reporter or someone's coming to request a fam trip? Like, who's going to answer that now, you know, to take that person out, that writer, to the best, you know, and all that stuff? Who's going to do that now? And just, you think of so many of those micro things we do day in and day out are now just gone, you know, in a lot of ways. And just the aspect of loss, or the, you know, the stages of grief that you almost been going through to this.
And that is part of, I think, the realization or the acceptance phase, where you begin to identify gaps that exist. And that was acknowledged by several of the city councilors very early in this process. But without having, I guess, the full breadth of understanding of what that was going to look like, and as conversations have continued within our board at Visit Duluth and our organization as it restructured and prepared for implementing this new scope of work in 2022, it has become quite apparent that there are gaps and they are significant. And there's not yet a real clear plan in place for how to address that.
You know, one of the parts, because I do want to talk a little more of the, you know, next step that's happening, but I do want to ask, looking back on this part of it, the RFP process, the merger and that type of stuff, you know, is there anything you would consider wanting to do differently, or words of advice, you know, for other decentralizations that may or may not go through this? Just, you know, with some hindsight behind you, what do you say or think about it now?
It was really a difficult time in the beginning of the RFP process, because I felt like I should blame myself for actually bringing forward the conversation with our mayor. I mean, really, that was the starting point. I don't know where we would have ended or began. There had been conversations in years previously, but I would say, I would caution people to consider the fact that what might seem like a really successful or potentially successful plan or a new method or a new process within your community, to be really mindful that there could be pitfalls that you would have never seen coming. And I think the way we can find out or discover what those might be is something that I mentioned at the Advocacy Summit, that a colleague had referenced listening deeply or more deeply to our elected officials and those in the community and our stakeholders. And I took it to an even deeper level of understanding and acknowledging that it's very easy when you are successful and providing really positive outcomes for everyone to give you the pat on the shoulder or say, that was great. We really like what you have planned for next year's marketing plan. More to come. Great job. And really taking that time and that moment to ask one more question to that individual. What was it that you thought was so impressive? What did you like the best? What do you define as success? You feel this was a successful year. How could we do better? Is there something you'd like to see us improve upon? Just one of those questions, instead of just accepting the accolade or the thank you or whatever that comment might be, I would really say, as a lesson learned, ask at least one more question.
Yeah, I think, you know, that is great advice, because this is not a battle that can be won with, I guess, pure logic, right? Just data, you know, I don't want to say the word facts, but just data, ROI, metrics, because you had all of that, you know, and that's, you know, wasn't enough is the right word, but it just, like, as you're kind of articulating, didn't resonate in the way you needed it to resonate for your effort or for your work. But I wanted to sort of ask then, you know, what are right now, as it stands, next steps for, you know, Visit Duluth and what it has in front of it for 2022 and beyond?
So what we ended up with was a $650,000 allocation from the city. Our previous allocations were $2 million. So breaking apart those dollars, the city actually is increasing its spend. In the award that went to the agency was $1.8 million, and then the $650,000 for Visit Duluth. So that's a positive for our community, hopefully. We have not yet begun conversations, transitioning conversations with the agency. It's my understanding that those will be taking place in the very near future as we rapidly approach the end of this year. So our goal is to really make this transition as successful as it can be. And with the limited dollars, it really meant a restructuring where there will be a modified leadership role. So my role will not exist. The leadership role will also have a sales component because of the scope of work being really very narrow and focused on that portion of our city's marketing efforts. So there will be a leadership role created for 70% sales and then 30% administration and leadership. That leaves resources for a director of sports, the director of sales, and potentially one other sales position to be filled, hopefully early in 2022, as we continue to ramp up that effort and we see it not only at pre-pandemic levels, but really exceeding those levels. So really critical that we are able to get those team members in place. And then the board is really reimagining what the visitor services component looks like so that we can continue that fulfillment piece, especially for the visitor, because really in the end, we can't afford to have our visitors come to our community and not have an experience that, you know, they've come to expect.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I suppose my sort of final question for you is, you know, as you indicated, you know, this is going to be your last year in service of a Visit Duluth, and you've spent nearly three decades doing this. I just sort of want to ask, you know, what does it feel like, you know, knowing 2022 will be different than the year before, and essentially, what is next for you?
I am excited to say that through a lot of soul searching and job searching, I am delighted to begin a consulting business where I have secured a contract to put on an event that is completely outside the realm of our industry, although has, I would say, some synergy and ties, and that is the director of Catalyst, which is the independent television festival held in Duluth every year, where content creators come to Duluth from all over the country and actually all over the world to meet with independent television network executives and producers and it's sort of a marketplace where these people come together and sort of develop the next content and episodic television that we all like to binge watch. So that will be a logistics and planning position. Mm-hmm. In addition to that contract, I am thrilled to be working with Destination Next in the year ahead and help develop strategic plans for destinations all over the country, which is really an opportunity where I've focused on one dot on the map for many decades. Now I will get to focus on lots of dots on the map, and I think it will be incredibly rewarding.
And that is exciting. I mean, I'm happy, like I said, all that knowledge that you're still in the sector, in the industry, and sounds like in a way still also supporting the community with the Duluth, which I'm glad to hear, you know, that.
It absolutely was. I think the push that this created nudged me to say, what would I want next in my career? If this hadn't happened, I would have been content and fulfilled and felt it very rewarding to continue my career all the way through to retirement here in Duluth. But I will tell you, and it probably sounds a little Pollyanna, but I would say that this has opened my eyes to even bigger opportunities that I would not have pursued otherwise. And I am determined to look back a year from now and say it was a kick-ass decision and I'm glad I went there.
Well, I mean, I think for you to have the poison to, you know, to say that at the end of what's already probably one of the toughest years of your career, I think that's extremely admirable. So again, and I wanted to just thank you extensively for taking the time, not only in Houston for coming up and sharing it, but really getting us to kind of talk through the full story and narrative of To Visit Duluth. As I said, it really is your story right now to tell and for us to listen in this sector, because, you know, the world is changing. A lot of us are finding ourselves under harder times post-pandemic, you know, and I don't believe we're going to see the last of RFP discussions, RFQ discussions. And, you know, our role as advocates is to prep ourselves and do what we can to hopefully that destinations don't fall in a similar scenario that what happened with Visit Duluth. So
I absolutely agree. We are seeing a shift within this community. And I think community is the most important word. I will forever be grateful to counterparts and colleagues. When you mentioned Christy Morrison, there are a list of individuals who so openly shared their experiences and were truly just a tremendous lifeline for me and for our organization. And while it wasn't the outcome we hoped for, I will forever be here as a resource for others as they may, you know, find themselves in a similar situation, because I know how valuable that was.
Absolutely. Thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, and Anna Tansky of Visit Duluth for this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service and to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or checking out our content through the advocacy section at the site or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.